Welcome, movie lovers, back for another Anatomy of Movie as we dissect Baywatch. That's right. Grab your favorite pair of swing trunks and get ready to have a good old time because we're going to talk about it. So stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. The iconic TV show has made it to the big screen via Dwayne Johnson as Mitch Buchanan and Zac Efron and many others. We're here to talk about it on Anatomy of a Movie. Joining me, we have Dimitri Panos.
Hey, movie fans. And you brought the guns.
I did.
Yeah, I was going to take off my shirt, but we want viewers, right? I mean, I guess if you don't go on, you don't go video on this.
Yes, for those of you listening, I have brought my tank top just in honor of the movie, of course. So there you have it.
And I'm not wearing any pants. No, I'm kidding.
You got your favorite Speedo on?
There you go, yes.
Awesome. All right, so for those of you just joining us for the very first time, we go in depth with movies. And so, therefore, we assume you've seen the movie, which is to say we're very spoiler-filled. So, if you haven't seen the movie and don't want it spoiled, go see the movie first, then come back to us. If you don't care or you've seen it, great. Secondly, you can always get our rundown. Just there's a link in the description box. Click that link. And this week we have quite a bit of photos. I couldn't rob you guys of photos for this one. So so not only do you get the rundown that we use, but you get the photos that we use as part of the rundown. So even if you're listening on audio, you still can partake in the visual aspects of everything.
Are you saying that we're going for a specific audience?
Listen, I'm doing this show for me. I'm my own specific audience for this one. I don't care if anybody listens to this show. This one's for me.
Awesome. Well, that's good. So I'll give it to you.
Blow those pictures up. There you go. So we'll go through various pictures. But I figured even before we talk about the movie itself, let's kind of go back to what Baywatch was.
Sure.
And, you know, it was an NBC show, canceled after the first season. But what I love about this story is that here's David Hasselhoff coming off of the success of Knight Rider. And he takes a shot on this and goes to bat for it, putting up his own money initially.
Sure.
To bring it back to life. And, oh boy, what an investment that was for him.
Yeah, and I forget what network it ended up on. And what years are we talking about here, too?
The first season was in 89, and then it got resurrected in the 90s.
Right, so we're talking a time where syndication was ruled, where shows, believe it or not, back in that time period, shows like Wheel of Fortune, Star Trek The Next Generation really changed the landscape of syndication as well. And Baywatch was actually part of that swell, because when you couldn't make it or a network wouldn't pick you up, this option came along and gave audiences, you know, because they didn't have to go to the network to see it. It would be on different channels depending on where you lived and times. But it was a great way to keep television shows alive, and Baywatch for sure benefited from that, I believe, because I forget what network it ended up on.
Yeah, I forget because I don't remember that part of my youth.
Yeah, but I don't think it went back to a network, so to speak. You know, it was like one of those, I believe it went into like that type of a syndication route.
Yeah, it was revived in 1991 with its first syndication run. So you are correct.
I almost know something.
You got that correct. And yeah, I mean, you know, David Hasselhoff is most known as part of the series. At its peak, this was just everywhere. To talk about, you know, one of the things that we're going to talk about is global appeal in terms of movies, and is global overtaking perhaps U.S. box office. And this was very much, I mean, it was popular in U.S., but talk about international acclaim.
Dude, it was one of our biggest exports. Yeah. And this is what made Hasselhoff an international star. This is what made him like the what Jerry Lewis was to France, it made Hasselhoff in Germany. Like, he became, like, it was from all of Baywatch. You can blame Baywatch for his singing career, his jocularity, so to speak. Like, he became, because of Baywatch, you know, he became a different character, so to speak. You know, Bourne was a new Hasselhoff because of internationally and what it meant and what it did. Everybody, this is what, back in the time when people would watch the show, they'd go, oh, America.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, in that way, absolutely, you know, 100%. The joke is that it used to be called Boob Watch, some of the other things, you know, the slow-mo run. I mean, the storylines themselves in many ways were very far-fetched. Not self-referential, as we'll talk about in the movie, but just absolutely ridiculous. A lot of love triangles and love stories. Definitely somewhat of a turnover of cast and things like that. But overall, it never took itself too seriously, and it just knew what it had.
You brought up turnover of cast, and there was a ton of turnover of cast in this show. And usually turnover in cast on a popular show usually means it survives maybe a season, maybe two, or maybe one and a half, like when you start getting rid of cast of a show that people watch on a weekly basis. Didn't hurt Baywatch at all, because it was about the cast. But it wasn't about the cast.
You just got new cast members to look at.
Yes.
And hey, listen, if that sounds sexist, there's plenty of good-looking guys, whether, you know, you talk about the, we'll talk about the original Matt Brody, or even back to season one through three, there's Eddie and, you know, all these, you know, definitely no shortage of people.
No, male and female.
To my knowledge, you never had a Ronnie type of character in Baywatch.
Oh,
unless
yeah.
It was like a one-off and that was it.
Yeah. Because that's why, you know, I didn't watch the show, because who am I going to relate to? Well, Ronnie I relate to, but that's so movie-ish. But we'll get into that later.
Okay. Well, let's talk, you know, I wanted to talk about this, you know, almost before we got overall impressions. And I guess I'll kick it off for me, because, you know, one of the things that critics are saying is, was there a need for Baywatch? Did anybody want Baywatch? And I, to that I say, listen, I don't, like, at what point in the universe is there not a place for Baywatch, where basically you're looking at, you're having fun and you can have good-looking people on screen? Like, that just got to be timeless. Now, if it's not timeless, it's not a world I want to live in. Did they execute it properly? We could talk about that. Okay. You know, I think there's certain things they could have done better, but overall, for what Baywatch was, I enjoyed it. You know, was it 21 Jump Street? Was it the more recent, let's say, Fist Fight that I rather enjoyed this year a lot, quite a lot? No, it wasn't those. But nonetheless, it made me laugh, certainly, and I came away with a good time, so much so that I recommend it. You know, I got to see it twice. Second time with Marissa, who does the panel with us, and a couple of other people. And yeah, they enjoyed it. Marissa, who in her wildest dreams never thought she would have watched Baywatch in her life.
Right. I never thought I'd see a Baywatch movie either, but that's funny that she went.
Yeah. So that's my sort of impressions. I'll get to the specifics of which, but I just wanted to share that.
Well, you know, for me, and I'm going to bring up actually some of the points that you were bringing up earlier. Like, for me, I mean, straight up, Baywatch was never a good television show. I mean,
no, not at all.
Okay, granted, you can't deny its global pop cultural impact, okay? But people didn't tune in because of the stories, okay? It was no Rockford Files. Hell, to me, it wasn't even the San Pedro Beach Bums. I mean, I believe the pilot to Baywatch, which was called Tentacles, was about an octopus that was stealing surfboards.
Not the original pilot, but I believe the, it was, quote, season two pilot.
An octopus stealing surfboards.
Either way, you're not wrong.
They should have incorporated that subplot into this, and that would have been hysterical. So I guess what I'm getting to is, we talked about, yes, this was one of America's biggest exports, okay? They loved it internationally, but they loved it here too. It was a very high-rated show. And it stayed on the air for a lot longer then hell, I would have thought, right?
I mean, it had 9 seasons and then Baywatch Nights and so on and so forth.
So, you know, so why make a movie from a TV show that wasn't, in fact, good? Well, in part for me, it's what else is Paramount doing today? You know, they are actually sort of kind of listless. So right now, until Mr. Giannopoulos can right that ship, throw in the very popular Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who seems like he can pair up with most anybody, including Sir Abs-a-Lot, Zac Efron here, and then some very attractive women in tight bathing suits and slow motion. But how do you, to me, it's how do you parody a show that became self-parody itself? That's, its, to me, its biggest challenge was, and Baywatch, to me, proves it can't. It takes itself too seriously, and when it tries for humor, just for me, a lot of it just wasn't funny. It's not for lack of trying, or the cast. I mean, I actually believe that they had good chemistry together. Yeah. There was, I mean, it wasn't just because they looked good. They looked as if they were having a really good time making this movie, but they, it seemed that they were having more fun making it than I definitely was watching it. But I'm not going to deny their chemistry. Mm-hmm. They worked well together, and their chemistry kept my attention until it didn't. This movie comes in at 119 minutes. I found there was a lot of driftwood. There was a moment where I thought the movie was near the end, and I looked at my watch, and I was shocked to learn, oh my head, there's another half hour to go with this. I was like, that's the point where Baywatch made me angry. And they're going to beg me, we can talk about this. Is comedy a dying breed? Are there no good comedy writers? Are studios too scared to take risks in an original comedy? You know, if Baywatch is the answer, then please let's not get to Baywatch Nights. You know, and these are, and I think comedy, you and I talk comedy a lot, and we do the comedy shows usually sometimes on our own like this. And we talk about it's getting harder and harder. And, you know, I want to talk about comedy, you know, and there's a reason why Baywatch is made.
Here's the thing. It's an interesting thing of how it did get made. And I still stand by, like, Baywatch has a place in time if done well at any point in time.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that regardless of what the TV show did. But what was interesting to me was, okay, so you have the Reno 911 creators or co-creator, Robert Ben Garnett, and
right,
you know, he goes into Paramount and they basically have a whole board of stuff, and Baywatch is down at the bottom. He's like, ooh, I'd be interested in that,
right?
And so it's not, you know, we talk about passion for a project, and sometimes there's movies that are just hit or miss, but at least you can tell, like, people were very passionate in making it. I think ultimately, as you pointed out, the cast has a lot of fun. I think, you know, in making this, people had fun. But it just seems like it didn't start from the right place, perhaps.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, too, because the making of this movie does, in fact, have an extremely long history that, if I'm correct, dates back to when Baywatch ended its television run. They were thinking of making that jump in the 90s to the big screen. And to me, that was the time to sort of strike, because, you know, Hasselhoff is riding this huge wave. And I'm not saying that the movie would have been huge in the 90s, but it would have made sense. I'm not saying it should have happened, but it would have made sense. But it didn't happen for a myriad of reasons of happening so. And it becoming a drama action or action drama? How would you categorize it?
What the actual show was?
Yes, what the actual show was.
Drama action.
Drama action, right? So now, you know, we get into, you know, 2017. We've had 21 Jump Street, which 21 Jump Street was actually a good show. But what they did is they turned it on its heels and they made it not a drama action as you know, a cop drama type thing. They actually made it into a very self-referential comedy that was successful. So I can understand Baywatch trying to go that route we could try to figure out how did that miss? Like, what happened? Like, again, I almost think that they took it almost too seriously. And then when you're injecting some of the humor, some of it was funny. I did get a laugh or two from here or there, but I don't know. We can talk about, like, what do you think? Like, what could they have done to have made this better?
You know, I guess I'll start with this. You know, for me, I thought where it definitely did cross the line was the mentor of Mitch and then Casey Jean. We already have Mitch and Casey Jean in the movie. That's The Rock and Kelly.
Right.
We don't need now, like, make them other people.
Right.
Meaning Pamela Anderson and David Hasselhoff. But
right.
But to make them, now you're like, okay, well, what's, if Mitch Buchanan is Mitch Buchanan, what's David Hasselhoff? Is he
right.
Mitch Hasselhoff?
Yeah.
And is she Casey Jean Anderson?
Yeah.
Like, it's just that's where the line was. Okay, you've tried a little bit too hard.
Yeah.
But apart from that, you know, I don't know. There's still something for me to the idea. And again, trust me, I think in the comedy scheme, I think there's tons of better comedies, and I think there's a tremendously different way to do this movie and still sort of achieve what they were perhaps mm-hmm. trying to achieve. But I did have fun doing it, or watching it, and where I'm going with it is just the fact that, I don't know, sometimes it's just good to turn off your brain and just, you know what, just enjoy it.
I get it. I just, you know, it's, look, The Rock has become extremely popular in above and beyond just pop culture, but in cinema, okay? Mm-hmm. You and I were talking about this. I want a list of movies that The Rock says no to. I mean, because this guy seems like he's in most everything. He's in a lot of movies, and he pairs up with a lot of people, you know, and I think the Fast and Furious franchise really elevated his game, and he started getting more roles. I mean, he's been paired up with Kevin Hart, and that movie worked really well. You know, Central Intelligence. You know, he's come a long way since, like, say, the Tooth Fairy. You know, he was always trying to.
Well, even in the Mummy, like, he was right. That was very. They're like, okay, he's. We get what he is. He's a wrestler, so let's kind of put him on the outside of things, and we'll utilize him for what
he
could.
And he was even in the sequel to Get Shorty. What mm-hmm. was that called? Be Cool?
Yeah,
or Be something? Cool, yeah. Okay. He played a gay character, and he was definitely trying to do different things, which I respect him for. First and foremost, the guy has had a ton of longevity, and now he's fallen into the Disney family. I mean, he was in Moana, which I'm not going to point to The Rock as being the success of Moana, but being incorporated into the Disney family, now he's going to be in the Jungle Cruise, okay? And he's in the Jumanji reboot with I believe, Kevin Hart again.
two names I never would have thought.
Right, that works together, but okay. And the thing about The Rock too, and I know this from experience, is that good movie, bad movie, you want him on your team. You know, it's a risk to make a movie, okay. But at least when you get The Rock, you know this: he's going to give it his all, and number two, he is going to do what is asked of him to promote the movie. Okay, I mean, I've gone to shows like in Vegas, CinemaCons, Show West, CinemaCon, and this guy has been there straight for like the past 5-6 years and sometimes promoting more than one movie, okay? So he'll show up for whatever studio. He loves, and he gets the business of exhibitors. He loves that. So he's very charismatic. He seems to be very nice. One thing that I got from watching Baywatch is truly, even offset, he was Mitch. He was the captain. He was the lieutenant. He was their boss. And that seemed to be something that would carry off of set, but not in a bad way, but in that very good familial, you know, family type atmosphere way. So I think putting The Rock in this movie, and number one, he's no bigger fan. To your point too, about bad reviews, he has gone on to combat those reviews. What actor do you know of? Sometimes they just go hide under a rock when it happens, yes. Not The Rock. He will come out and say, guys, don't listen to this. I mean, you know, if you're Paramount, you're thrilled to death to have him on your team because he will go to bat. When I went away and I was at the airport, they had the big video monitors and they were promoting Baywatch, and he was doing silly stuff there. I mean, he does what's asked and above and beyond. He's behind the project 100%. So I understand why you would get him into the project, you know.
Well, in terms of development, and this, I'm taking this from your research, but I saw various bits of it too. He argued with Paramount. They could have made it PG-13, but it was his idea, his sense of humor, to go, no, let's go R and let's see how far we can push the envelope. Like, it's my type of humor. I like that sort of thing, and I think we can have a lot of fun with this.
And he fought for that. And I'm glad, because I'm not sure how this would have gone down as PG-13.
It would have been. I think the story and everything would have been a completely different movie.
Yeah, I think so. But I'm glad that he had the gumption to, you know, and he's got the weight sort of kind of now where he can go to executives and fight that fight.
Yeah.
But that's why I say he's good for a project. Here's my thing about The Rock, is right now he's in this part of his career, like, where he wants to be well-liked by everybody, and he is. He already is, okay? But remember back in the 80s and such, Schwarzenegger wanted to become more than just the action hero, okay? Mm-hmm. So he was fortunate because he paired up with people like, talented people like Ivan Reitman, who would put him in movies like Kindergarten Cop. In Twins, like, people saw a comedic side to Schwarzenegger, and it worked. And the movies are still funny today. The Rock already, he's popular as well, and he can have some comedies under his belt. He needs an Ivan Reitman in his life. He needs that story. He needs that Kindergarten Cop type of a story, or even a Twins kind of a story. He needs that creative comedy that will really catapult him, and he won't be getting Baywatch type scripts. He can be getting solid, good comedy scripts. And then when you add it to the factor of his already likability and the fact that he goes to that, I mean, he's already a multinational world global star from wrestling, right? Factor that in, like, that's what he needs. Yeah. Like, I think. You know, he needs that good, solid comedy that everybody loves.
I don't think it's a bad suggestion.
You know, do you agree or, like, yeah, I mean, if...
I'm trying to think of who that would actually be for him. There's obviously, like, Phil Lord and what's his partner's name? The ones that did the Lego movie.
I can't...
I think they could... perhaps get along, but yeah, I don't know who that
and
would
the
be.
Funny thing is that Ivan Reitman was one of the producers of this movie.
Yes, he
Montecito,
was.
Montecito, you know, mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I'm hoping, you know, you never know. I mean, that's what he needs, that to really catapult that comedic career, because I think he's got the charisma. Yeah. And I also think that he has the comedic chops, and he has his timing down right. And like I said, he pairs well with Zac Efron. He obviously paired well with Kevin Hart.
Very
People
much so.
Like that. So he needs more of that Kevin Hart kind of stuff too. Because he truly is breaking the... And he's on Ballers right now on HBO. So with that, he shows that he can do a little bit more of the dramatic side. I mean, this guy's doing a ton. He just doesn't stop. Like I said, I want to see what he says no to. Because he's so busy.
Absolutely. So the interesting part before we dive into the story, like, kind of giving you a background of the story. So Damian Shannon and Mark Swift wrote it. They're a writing duo, but known for horror, ironically, of all things. So they met together at the at USC, and then they just kind of been working ever since. And they did Friday the 13th in 2009, Freddy vs. Jason, and Shark Tale. So, you know, interestingly enough, a little bit different of their wheelhouse.
Yeah, they go for, well, one family picture from correct Shark Tale, the animated Will Smith, right? Yeah, and then you have two hard our franchise horror series. And then, you know, it's not unlike Danny McBride, who's going from comedy and now he's writing the Halloween movie. So, you know, but hey, if you're a good writer, you know, why wouldn't you be able to tackle a comedy, you know, and go for that?
Well, I think it's this. Well, I would argue, you know, the big thing is, I think it's much easier for a comedy writer to write a drama than it is, like, comedies, you either have it or you don't.
I agree.
You can't, it's very, I don't think, like, Aaron Sorkin, good luck writing a comedy. No offense to him. I think he's a fantastic screenwriter. But he's not writing Billy Madison or...
No.
So.
No, I mean, it's, that's why I think, like, that's, again, comedy sort of seems to be a dying breed. It's as if, unless there's something that they can franchise.
Here's the thing, you know, I would argue, like, and again, by the way, as you guys listen to me, you guys will actually wonder what the things I say, do I actually like this movie? Yes, I do. So, but there are going to be things I contradict myself with. But in terms of where film's at, I look at it in the sense that if you're a writer, you've jumped ship from films and moved on to TV.
Sure. It's,
you know, and you have not longevity, but let's say job security. Certainly more so than this. You are a producer. You're well respected. And you know what? Like what Hollywood used to be. You know, it just amazes me the fact that movies like Hollywood. We talk about it. There's several writers every now and then, but even then, it's like it goes from one person then to a rewrite.
Sure.
Whereas the old Hollywood, it was very much a writer's room for movies.
Yeah.
And now they've just transitioned that into TV. But why it doesn't exist for movies anymore is beyond me, and that's partly why I think movies are the way they are. It's just we don't have the writer's room that we used to have for movies.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, no, and that's a good theory as well, and I agree, because there isn't that... You can read the old Hollywood stories about how when people like Spielberg and Lucas first met, and then they were friends with Francis Ford Coppola. One of them was a friend with Francis Ford Coppola, or not Irvin Kershner. Who's the gentleman that wrote Empire Strikes Back? Frank.
I'm not a Star Wars buff, but
well, forget. Oh my God, he was that big time. Oh God, now I got to look it up. Because because he was a writer that they used to hang around with, and then they would, you know, he wrote like Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it would be like, well, we want to kick around these ideas, and you're right. And I don't know if that's necessarily happening, but I want to know what's happening more or less to comedy, because Baywatch, I can see why, because for Paramount, which isn't this sort of kind of. In this, they're in doldrums right now. And Baywatch, if it hits, that's a franchise for them. Okay, they're not thinking. Let's make one really good movie, and if people like it, then we'll go back to the drawing board and talk about sequel. They're thinking Baywatch. Wow, like we can have a Baywatch 2, a 3, and then we can do a Baywatch Nights. Like they're thinking a much larger picture, where before it was if you made Beverly Hills Cop. And Beverly Hills Cop becomes a huge movie. Then they start talking about, when should we do a sequel? And then it was a discussion because it even wasn't a done deal. I mean, so now I just wonder, like, it's tough to find original comedy. You know, everything's derivative of something else. I mean, I'm seeing trailers for movies, and albeit they do look sort of kind of funny. There's that Girls' Night Out, mm-hmm. the one with...
Scarlett Johansson.
Well, there's
Rough Night. And there's
Rough Night.
And I forget the other one, which is...
Lawrence Kasdan, by the way, is the name of the writer that I'm thinking of. They all knew each other and started kicking around idea, and Lawrence Kasdan's known to be a really decent writer and director. You know, he's pretty good. And then there's now we're going back
Girls
to...
Trip.
Girls Trip.
Okay? Rough Night and Girls Trip.
These are all derivative from, like, Bridesmaids. Now, Bridesmaids is a very original comedy, right? And so... Bad Mom sort of kind of falls out, you know, falls in that category. We have women, strong women, making good comedies, but it's tough.
They had the Tina Fey one and the sisters too.
Yeah, so it's tough like, let's come up with something that's not bridesmaids. I mean, we could put women in a comedy for sure. I'm all for it. I mean, there should be. There are extremely funny women out there. And those two movies we talked about, they actually look sort of funny to me. You know, I'll see them.
I don't think...
Well, Jada Pinkett Smith looks hysterical.
Girls' Night, I think, is going to be funnier than Rough Night.
Yeah.
But I think Rough Night, unfortunately, is getting more promos right now, from what I'm seeing.
Same here.
Nonetheless.
But in any case, going back to Baywatch, I think the Paramount looks at it not as a film, as a one-offer. They're hoping, they're trying to spark something, get something going, because they've lost so much, and it's just been really tough. So when you do Baywatch, you've already had 21 Jump Street, and the equally as good, I guess, 22 Jump Street, the sequel.
Yeah.
They did really well, but where do you take this? And it's tough because, let me ask you this, what if they took Baywatch, right? And what if they did make it more of Miami Vice-ish? Like where it was more of a action drama. Because or if you're going to do it this way, how do you separate yourself from 21 Jump Street?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a comedy.
I mean, it's a decent question. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of the answer, I don't know. But, I mean, I guess why don't we dive into the story a little bit and see if the answer emerges, right? So, I guess, you know, overall, I mean, what did you think of the story, you know? Here they are, lifeguards, and boom, we gotta save the beach.
We got drugs in the beach. We got this hot woman who's a hotel owner who wants to run the drug cartel, and it was somewhere in Florida.
Yes,
Emerald
Bay.
Yeah, Emerald Bay. It was to me, this was a Baywatch story. I mean, right? I mean,
yeah, very much. Yes.
Yeah, it was a Baywatch story. Mm-hmm. You know, that it had all the trappings of a what could be a very cheesy Baywatch story. And then you had beautiful women and lifeguards trying to solve a crime. Where there's one character in the movie who actually was one of my favorites. The actual cop who kept on going.
Oh, Allerby?
You guys are lifeguards. Like, no, we'll handle this. Like, and they never got the joke. No, we're keeping the beach. No, you just make sure people don't drown. That was actually a fun take in going back and forth, but that's not what Baywatch was ever about. They always got involved in these shenanigans.
They did, you know, obviously the difference in the movie version is that they're a lot more aware of it, where, you know, with a TV show, God knows what could have happened. The only things that they reference of the past is the relationships, but at no point are we going back of like, oh, remember last week when the ship blew up and we had to save everybody, and that was never brought into, because we just needed to keep it moving.
I get it.
I mean, you know, I in terms of the introduction of characters, it's very Baywatch to have trainees, so I thought that aspect worked well.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy the idea of Matt Brody, although I think perhaps a little bit too hit on the head a lot of the times. I thought they could have taken it down a little bit, perhaps. Just because he's just such an idiot.
Yeah, but Zac Efron has sort of kind of made that popular of himself right now, especially since Neighbors. You know, his character's not that far off when you break it down.
No.
Now, watching the trailer to this, I like the idea of, guys, you know, we need, like, I didn't know that they were going to make him such an oaf, so to speak, because I like the idea of, I thought he was going to be more of I thought he would sort of kind of know what he was doing, but he was just going to be the big-headed, hey, I won 2 gold medals, but I thought that was going to, like, that's a good idea. It's like, I understood it from the trailer. No, we need him for publicity's sake, because he was in the Olympics. But then they added this other story where he tanked the relay because he threw up in the pool and stuff. And so.
I mean, I thought in terms of something new, certainly it was new.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think part of the reason why perhaps that it's just he never really gave her a good reason because, you know, he gives that line of they just needed me to win the race.
Mm-hmm.
And and she says to him, yeah, well, you certainly made sure they didn't. but it's not, yeah, it's, there wasn't anything beyond that. So, but in terms of the story, I felt, it felt a little bit different, again, because I have such a history with it, and, you know, perhaps someone who's going into it a lot more fresh, they might not. And part of it, it's that it's the movie format, but in the TV show, you had multiple plot lines going on.
Sure.
This was very much, okay, find out one thing, get to the next, which leads us to the next thing. It, you know, it's in that regard, so.
You had that, but, you know, I mean, the way I was viewing it, and maybe I'm diving too deep, but, you know, you had potential romantic, you know, relationships budding. You had the trainee. What was his name? Ronnie?
You had Ronnie Summer obviously Matt Brody.
You know, and Matt Brody is learning to be part of the team, and his potential relationship with, you know, Alexander Daddario's character. So you had all those little silly plot lines, and then you had, you know, the gorgeous woman who runs the hotel, who's trying to, you know, pressure all of the other hotels to sell her their property so she can be the drug czar of Emerald Bay. And you had all that silly drama going on. That, to me, was like right straight out of... It was as if they just picked up an unused script. But I'm telling you, Squid stealing surfboards would have been a great subplot. Like... Mitch, we got. What happened to my surfboard?
Well, sand drifters, and then it's would have been, yeah. In terms of Brody and Mitch, what did you think about that interaction? Because obviously, a lot of people are writing about the bromance between them, and I thought it worked overall very funny, and so much so in terms of when you go back to your idea that they're having fun doing it. It was Zac Efron who came up with every single one of those nicknames.
Yes.
Whether High School Musical, whether One Direction. And
let's face it, Adam Sandler's made a career doing that. We've talked about when we talk about Adam Sandler movies. But however, I definitely think that their chemistry worked really well together. And The Rock appreciated Zac Efron's work ethic. Apparently, Zac Efron was waking up at 5 in the morning to start working out. And he's like, who does that? You know, but... Obviously, I think that they had a good chemistry together. The Rock appreciated the fact that he was throwing these ideas out, and he even credits Zac Efron for saying, you know what, he brought a lot of the comedy into this movie. That was really funny. And the mere fact, I really thought that The Rock was able to carry it off and say it so that it was funny. Every time he called him a new name, it was awesome. Right. You know, and it's funny that Zac Efron goes, oh, you got to call me High School Musical. That was a funny line, you know? So I liked their pairing. I thought they were very good together as a team. But again, I think to The Rock's credit, you know, it looks like you can put him up with almost everybody. And he's gonna try to make it work out.
Overall, here's the thing. I to that same notion, I don't want to discredit Zach. Right?
No.
We've seen The Rock work with Alexandra in San Andreas,
right?
And she played his daughter. And while for most of the movie, spoiler, tune out for a little bit, 20 seconds. They're separated for most of the movie. When they do have their scenes together, it's very touching and believable.
Yeah.
Anthony, if you will, from the booth, bring up a couple of the cast photos. Only because if you're talking about the workout thing, I don't know how true this is. Although I also don't find it that untrue if someone were to tell me. The notion that these guys literally just all they did was work out and eat like celery to stay a part of this movie for like whatever amount of time that they filmed.
I didn't know about the diets, but
again, whether or not that's fully true, I don't know. At the same time, I don't see it being not true either. You know, they were all very conscious of, okay, we got to maintain our body.
Alexandra Daddario goes on, when she found out she'd have to spend 3 months in a swimsuit, she was like, she decided to get off her rear and train with Zac Efron's trainer. And that gentleman's name is Patrick Murphy. And to get in shape, she went from doing the occasional yoga session to training 4 or 5 days every week. And that included free weight training, BOSU balls, BOSU balls, TRX straps, and much more, leading her to put on what her trainer called visual lines of definition. Now, she was mostly in a red bathing suit, so there are nice lines everywhere to be had in this movie, for male and or female, mind
this
you.
This is true.
You know, and she did it because she wanted to look good in the swimsuit. And she had to wear it every day on screen, even when she auditioned for the role. And then the ongoing joke is that everyone in the movie is supposed to be supernaturally attractive. And she's like, really? I've never done anything where I thought about my body as much. You're literally in a bikini the entire day. She said she even wore a swimsuit when she auditioned with Zach. And their chemistry was pretty good, too.
Yeah.
That's why I feel all around the cast got along well together. And you're right about Zac Efron. I wish he didn't have to play such the dummy.
Yeah. Because, I think it's... You mentioned Neighbors. I could go to Dave and Mike Need Wedding Dates. Yeah, he's kind of that in that same boat. Speaking of auditioning bathing suits, Kelly, who plays CJ, she decided to audition in a bathing suit, which I thought was funny, which she kind of regrets, but obviously I doubt she regrets it fully because she got the role, so something worked.
Well, it's to her credit. Could you, from what I understand, the audition process is it could be a very nerve-wracking process, and that if it's one of those things where people are waiting outside the door, okay, there isn't much camaraderie going around. They're competing in a sense for a role, okay. And I just was thinking, oh my head! Could you imagine the other women who might have been up, who were up? Not might have been. They were up for that role as well. And then she shows up wearing the red suit. Like, I'm surprised they just didn't like going, oh f you, I'm out of here. There's no. How do you compete? Like, I mean, good on her for having the courage to do that. Because remember, there were times like Sean Young showing up in a Catwoman outfit really didn't do her any good. Well, she also hid under the desk at Tim Burton and popped out because she wanted the role of Catwoman. So that didn't work out for her so much. But for her, you know, it worked. Right now you say, brilliant! If she didn't get the role, number one, we wouldn't be hearing about the story, and she'd never dress that way again.
Never again, yeah.
To do it. So it's like baseball. Oh, yeah, that was a great... That's great that you subbed out that player. That was a brilliant move. And if it didn't work, that was the stupidest move ever. So...
Absolutely. I want to talk about the comedy aspect specifically, because, you know, we sort of meandered a little bit, but when you spoke about Alexandra, one of the things that you had sent me was the fact that she wanted to be a part of the movie because of a very specific scene. Now, when I was first starting to read it, I thought she meant the coroner scene. And where I'm going with this is, there's two completely very dick-heavy jokes and scenes in this entire movie. And so I wanted to, you know, obviously get your perspective on both and whatnot. And I'll let you complete the thought of Alexandria and what she said, and then we'll talk about the scene.
The scene that she's specifically talking about, and I personally think it's the funnier of the two scenes, is a scene where Ronnie, played by John Bass, gets his junk stuck in like a beach chair, a wooden beach chair, because he is excited. Because of, I'm sorry, what was
CJ.
CJ, who there was a little love interest going there. She was next to him, and he got excited. And who's the comedian?
His buddy. Friend is there. Yeah. I forget. I'll look it up.
Because I actually thought he was going to be in the movie more. I was sort of kind of bummed that he wasn't. Points out that he's like, dude, look south because you're pointing north, so to speak. And he does a header onto this chair, and he gets stuck in the chair. Hannibal Buress.
Yes.
And that to me, it was a very funny scene because, A, then he stands up with the chair, which is a funny visual. He's stuck. His privates are stuck through the chair. And CJ keeps on, like, caressing his head, and he's like, get away from me. That's not helping. And meanwhile, he's like, I am so embarrassed. And I was like going, yeah, that would happen to me. I would be going, yeah, that's very embarrassing. And then when he talked to Alexander Daddario, he goes, did you know about this? She goes, oh, no. No, we all know about what happened to you in the chair. That was a funny played out scene. I wish more of the comedy were that clever throughout the movie, because it was just like, please stop touching me. Please stop touching me. It's not helping. And Hannibal, who was it? It was like thinking you're, where did the line, like, thinking your grandmother's underwear or something?
Oh,
like
I think CJ might have been the one feeding it to him.
And he's like, get away from me. That was a very, when you're thinking of comedy in movies, I felt that that was a very structured, played out bit.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? And oh, and that's why she wanted to do this movie for that scene. So.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere in the best of ways. And I thought, here's the thing, it's kind of an interesting comparison, because when I look at that scene, it has the right amount of balance in terms of how much you show and how much you give.
Right.
The second scene, the coroner's scene, there's no bones about
it. No.
And, you know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, the only reason Mitch ultimately does it is he's hazing Matt Brody to touch the guy's dick, and so he can take a picture. Yeah. He's not actually checking for anything.
No.
And I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a guy. I was just like, oh, this is a little bit too far.
Yeah, it just didn't have the heft, so to speak, as that first scene. Because this one was, the second scene was purposely gratuitous.
Yeah.
Where I agree with you. The first scene on the beach, it was multi-layered, too. Because, number one, he can't get out of the situation because she's trying to help him, and that's not helping. It's only making matters worse. Then you throw in the embarrassment factor, because everybody on the beach now is watching him, and he's standing up with the chair stuck to his head. So everybody knows what's going on. So you have that embarrassment factor. So
and I loved even Mitch of like, yeah, you know, I've gotten my penis stuck a couple of times. Yeah, in women.
And it's just like,
what? Not the same, Mitch. Not the same.
Mitch. Yeah. So that's why I felt that that was a very well-crafted scene, from writing to acting to directing to the way that it was edited, because we didn't stay on the junk enough, but we saw enough to see how it got stuck. And it was like, yeah, you needed a crowbar it was just very funny, where the scene in the hospital just was gratuitous. Like, I don't mind gratuity, but it just seemed gratuitous for the sake of we got to show another penis in the movie. We got to get a penis in the movie.
At what point is that a note from the executives? But
yeah, we need another penis in the movie. We need another, like, you know, penis. So now what was funny is when they're hiding in, but that was in the trailer too, yeah. You know, and the fat was dripping on him, and he comes out and he's drinking the jug
Purell.
that was sort of funny, you know. But again, I wish there was more humor like there was on the beach. That scene on the beach, because it happened so early on in the movie, I actually had hope. Mm-hmm. I was like, this scene's sort of fun. I'm laughing. This is a funny scene. I go, wow.
Well, okay. it seemed like. The character of Ronnie would never have anything to do with the original TV show, but no. Stole the show. So I want to ask you, and we'll talk about Leeds as a character as well, but at the first party, right, the actual at the club, when Mitch tells him, like, I need you. And at first he's hesitant, and he's like, no. And then he switches gears completely,
right,
and just does his bit. What did you think of that bit?
You know, it was just chubby guy dancing. I thought his other bits were funnier. Like, again, for me, it's a double-edged sword. Because on one hand, right, whenever I see movies, whether it's a comedy, drama, action movie, whatever, whenever I see beautiful people falling in love with beautiful people, I'm like, yeah, well, of course. Like, of course it's going to happen, right? how come they don't have like beautiful people and then there's me? And then this movie does it, right? And they do it pretty well, but then it's like, yeah, no. That's just that only will ever happen in the movies. Like a guy like him wasn't gonna do it, but where they
You're
used
not the tech
him,
guy? You're not, not the fucking
I'm
tech
not
guy.
The fucking tech guy. Nope. Unfortunately, you know, but where he was the most funny was when outside of the dancing, which Farley was the, you know, could carry off Chris Farley mm-hmm. could carry off like the fat dancing. That scene just went on for a little bit too long, and especially since our villain like knew it was a ruse anyways, so it almost had no place in it, or it just went on too long for me. But otherwise though, he's this John Bass, he was funny. I liked when they were running on the beach at the end and he trips up Zac Efron.
Which apparently was Zac's idea.
Was it? Yeah. I think that's a funny scene. Watching him train. Like, I love the fact that they say the kid's got a lot of heart. Well, I have a lot of heart, too. You know, I'm like, oh, he's somebody I could root for. But then in the end, it's a movie. It would never happen. But I loved, I love them. They wake up in bed and she's like, you want some pancakes? He's like, yeah. And I'm like going, yeah. And then when she's away and he's like doing this, and then she goes, yeah, I'm still here. He goes, oh, yeah. I'm like, yeah, that would be me. It was. I thought those scenes were, again, they were clever because they were making fun of that physical archetype. And you're right. Somebody like Ronnie would never be in the original Baywatch. And he always had a shirt on. Yeah. Which was awesome.
Well, except for the shower scene when he's singing Katy Perry's Roar. He gets caught by surprise there.
Yeah. Co-ed showers.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, in thinking about it, I did love his character. I think he did steal a lot of the show, believe it or not. You know, just even like, yeah, salad. I'll have a salad. I'm a leafy greens kind of guy. Yeah. Really? Just, no one's eating freaking salads? How the hell do you guys look like that? So I thought that played well.
Yeah, he had one other funny line, and it was in regard. Oh, you know, because he was the guy who goes, it must be, is it just me? She's always running in slow motion. Now, again, self-referential, but it was just the way. But when Alexander Daddario's like, yeah, I see. He goes, you see it too? It's like, wow, that's crazy. Yeah, and it was just the way he delivered it. As well, and it's one of those relationships. Would a woman like that go for a guy like that? Eh, usually only in the movies. But I'm glad it worked out for him.
Well,
it's like, yay!
To that point, the slow mo bit, right? I want to ask you about this because then it, you know, they turn around and you know, CJ when Pamela Anderson CJ comes in,
right. At the end,
young CJ is like,
because she's going to be the new
captain.
Yeah, captain, right?
But CJ, young CJ, is looking at it like, oh, this is going to take a while because of the slow mo, which I thought was funny. But let me ask you, that, you know, not to be mean to Pamela Anderson, but like, it just, I felt almost bad for it because we're not in the time that she was the icon that she, you know, she's still the icon that she is, but. You know, I don't know. I thought it did her a slight disservice.
I get what they were going for, and I get the self-referential joke. It could have been done maybe differently. I was never the biggest Pamela Anderson fan, and I understand her appeal in Baywatch. She tried very hard to do other things.
Stacked was a good TV show. I will say,
how
check it out.
Did that last?
It didn't, but it was actually pretty, you know, fun. And I'm just saying.
The
not that I'm not also not saying I'm the biggest like advocate of Pamela Anderson. You know, yeah, I'm not one way or against
her. She became extremely popular from Baywatch. Barbed Wire didn't do anything for her career, but then there was a sex tape that came out. So, you know, again, it's just not my particular type, which is fine. It's no dis. You know, she's listen. To talk about trials and tribulations, this is a woman who's gone through a lot. And actually, I applaud some of the things that she's focused her life on now. because that's a complete turnaround than what she was, okay? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, something big in life has to happen for that to happen. I wish they gave her better due. Like, it would have been, like, fun to maybe have, instead of having that guy captain, mm-hmm. why didn't you just have her as that entire role? Make her the bad guy at the end. Like, at least that way she would have been utilized better, I think. And not so much, as you said, and I don't disagree, done as a disservice. Because, Jesus Christ, Hasselhoff had his, you know, had his roles, and it wasn't a disservice to him. He was just being the caricature of himself, which he already is. No. So it wasn't doing anything, but she could have done, they could have put her in a better
spotlight.
Or maybe she needed saving or something. Maybe she was running in slow motion and she tripped. You know, I mean, they could have done something else, I think.
I agree with you there. I want to talk about Leeds, the character of Leeds, because, you know, obviously she's our villain and whatnot, which will also tie. I want to talk about specifically the ending part. She just dies.
Yeah,
she just dies, which is absolutely ridiculous.
She gets blown up by a very big firework thing, like a bazooka.
The bazooka fireworks. But I thought overall very charismatic. This is her first Hollywood role, correct?
I believe so. Yeah, there was lots being said about this role for her. I mean, she got a lot of attention, and she's in Quantico. And I don't know. Look, at number one, there's no denying her beauty and her uniqueness.
I mean, she won. Come on. Like, you don't win, you know, the world pageant and not have beauty.
And there's no denying that. By placing her as the villain, number one, it just goes back to, I mean, some people have criticized her, and I'm like, why? I mean, she does this role. She looks like she's having a good time doing this part, right? I mean, it's not going to win her any awards or, you know, I mean, it could. I'm not sure it'll help her get any other jobs, but she had fun doing it. She looked fantastic doing it. I mean, I can't look at this movie and go, oh my God, the acting was so horrible. She did what she had to do, and she appeared to have a good time playing in that role. So I can't criticize her at all for being in. You're right. Her character just sort of gets blown up, and that's it. Bye.
Just no remorse whatsoever.
Yeah.
But
what did you think of her?
I mean, I thought she was obviously very stunning, especially in that green dress.
Yes.
And you know what? I they did switch up the character from being a male to a female, which I believe is The Rock's idea, or that's at least how it's, you know, put to paper. And one of the things that I thought worked well was the addition that, you know, she kept saying, like, I thought at times that she could have been over the top, and yet she had those great lines where, if I was a man, you would say I'm driven.
Right.
And I was like, okay, well, that's a good addition. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but it's like, okay, well, it does make you kind of question and wonder of like, okay, well, perhaps.
What movie did this line come in? You know, and again, there's just no denying that they really filled this movie up with very beautiful people. And she was a very beautiful villainess. And she played it just fine. Yeah. Like, in the confines of look, if you were to take this out and put it into another kind of a crime thriller, you'd go, Jesus, you should have gotten somebody else. But in the confines of a Baywatch movie, she was perfect. Like, she wasn't cheesy, I didn't think. She delivered her lines fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see more from her. I really do. You know, I don't watch Quantico, but, you know, it doesn't show me that she can act. It shows me, like, okay, she can have fun with the role, and yeah. I'd like to see more.
And she doesn't mind being in a Baywatch movie.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
All right, so if you will allow me, unless there's any other story elements, I figured I'd do a quick rundown of the history of the main characters.
Please, I would love that. Because,
So we have some pics. So, and by the way, if you're in audio form, click the link in the description box to download not only the rundown, but the pictures. And so here's a side-by-side comparison of the various characters. So here's Mitch Buchanan, originally played by David Hasselhoff, now The Rock. And Hasselhoff has been in all the seasons. Mitch Buchanan is the main character of the series, going all the way to the penultimate season of Baywatch Hawaii in 2000 when Hasselhoff decided to leave the series. But he retained his position as executive producers. As the years progressed, Mitch increasingly served as the mentor and father figure to many of the younger lifeguards at Baywatch headquarters, helping them in work-related matters and also their personal lives, which, you know, you get that.
Yeah, I have a question. So the original Baywatch, I always remember that that was what people believe Southern California to be and look like. That's... That was it. And I think that was the appeal, particularly too, coming from Boston. When you saw Baywatch, you're like, oh my God, California, beaches. Oh my God.
California
heck.
Dreaming.
Yeah. And so just imagine, you know, overseas as well. Like, that was what they looked at California as. The show ran on for a long time. And it was filmed, I believe,
in Malibu,
right? They changed the setting to Florida, and I don't know if that was because Rock's filming Ballers in Florida, but I heard they moved Ballers to California.
Well, Florida, from my understanding, is because of tax incentive.
Tax incentive? Okay. Yeah,
primarily. I mean, maybe there's other reasons, but primarily tax incentive.
Okay. So, you know, it was interesting to me because, to me, Malibu in California were easily as big as the show.
Yeah.
You know, that's what people who didn't live in California, Southern California, they pointed to Baywatch and go, oh, yeah, oh my God, look at California. People are swimming. Look at the beautiful women. The water looks warm.
Now we got Florida dreaming.
Now we got Florida dreaming, which said the water's probably a lot warmer.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Plenty of great beaches all over the world, by
the
way.
That's true.
So then we have the character of Matt Brody, played by Zac Efron in this one, but originally played by David Charvet. He was on from seasons 3 through 5 and then reoccurred in 6. He had a long-term relationship with Summer Quinn, which they allude to in the movie, in the 4th season, and pursued a similar relationship with C.J. Parker, so maybe something for the future in the movies, in the 5th and 6th seasons. He was forced to resign because of a phony sexual harassment lawsuit filed by series bad girl Neely, but was reinstated after the lawsuit proved to be false. After a while, Matt went back to France, unable to cope with Neely's return. He eventually returned, but after going on a holiday with some members of the team, he was never seen again, which suggests he returned to France again. Now, ironically, this is my speculation. I think he's he in the movie version, I think it's Matt Brody mixed with Eddie Kramer, who was played by Billy Warlock, who was in seasons 1 through 3. And Eddie began life on Baywatch as a teenager with a complicated background. Being an orphan, he learned from an early age to defend himself, a theory that got him in trouble. He kept to himself and liked to keep himself in the box. This helped him in some situations. Eddie was homeless during some periods of time, and he was helped out by lifeguard Craig, and then eventually he started a relationship and so forth. So that's kind of my theory, is that in the movie version, they took those two characters and put them together.
What's your theory on... We talked about this. So his name's Matt Brody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge Jaws fan. I can't help not think that they took the first name of Matt Hooper, the oceanographer in Jaws, and then paired it up with the last name of the chief of police of Amityville Island, who they worked together in Jaws to capture the shark, to kill the shark, whose last name is Brody. Matt Brody. I'm just throwing it out there.
I have no doubt that it's very possible, simply because by season 3, they'd already gone through so many characters than any inspiration that they could get to take.
Green dress.
Then you have Victoria Leeds. Yes, I picked out the very green dress that has great cleavage, I will say and admit. And here's the thing. She had a lot of fun doing it. She's a new character, so it's not like she came from the TV show. If you listen to her on Chelsea Handler's show, she talks about how much fun she had. I'm sure in other interviews as well, but that one in particular, I got a chance to catch. And, you know, what she enjoyed about her role is that while she's in a Baywatch movie, she doesn't have the pressures as all the Baywatch girls.
Right.
So she didn't have to follow the strict diets and all that quite as much.
I got to tell you, I wish there were more outtakes. I have a feeling during that dance scene, I have a feeling she was cracking up.
Oh, I bet.
I have a feeling because I was getting the sense that she was holding back, like going, what the hell did we just, like, cause she even says, I don't know what the hell that was, but thank you very much. But I have a feeling she was cracking up.
Oh,
I just have a feeling, and I would love, there's got to be video of that.
When the Blu-ray or DVD comes out, I'm sure. Then we have Summer Quinn, which, you know, apart from like from Matt Brody's relationship, she's not as standout as you would imagine her to be. And originally played by Nicole Eggert, Summer and her mother Jackie moved to California to escape Jackie's abusive ex-boyfriend. They traveled across country in their trailer and set up home in a local trailer park. Summer was a star athlete in her hometown, winning many awards for swimming. Her mother's ex-boyfriend tracked them down and confronted Summer. When he began to get physical with her, Matt Brody stepped in and stopped them. This was the start of a long relationship between the two. Later, with the help of CJ Parker, Summer overcame bulimia. Summer then left to pursue
her... That was in the very special episode of Baywatch.
Yes.
The bulimia. That was special episode of Baywatch.
Which, if you watch Baywatch, what I loved about it was on tonight's episode of Baywatch, and they would kind of give you the tease of what you're going to see. And then you have the, I would say, the most iconic of the girls, Casey Jean, CJ Parker, played by Pamela Anderson from seasons 3-7. A strong, dedicated lifeguard who is also the object of desire from several men on the beach, eventually left Baywatch and married a rock singer in Mexico. Not her actual real life. This is CJ we're talking about. But unfortunately, it didn't last. She later opened up a beach cafe in Hawaii and married one of her waiters, Leonard. Ugo.com voted CJ Parker one of the top 10 blondes.
Now, let me ask you something, okay? That, if you can go back to that other picture right there, see, this isn't the Pamela Anderson that we know now. Not the older, but even later on in years, like Barbed Wire. I mean, you know, she's a natural beauty in this picture.
Mm-hmm.
She's had work done. And I don't know if it was necessarily necessary. I mean, she's again, when you look at this picture, she doesn't, I don't know. Again, I'm just going by, you had natural beauty. She's had a rough life. Being with Tommy Lee couldn't have been easy. Now, the actress who plays her in this new Baywatch, again, she's stunning.
Kelly Rothbach.
Yeah. She, you know, she was really good.
She was. She had a lot of fun doing it.
She was great. And I hope, you know, she continues an acting career. I hope that it doesn't stymie her, but she was really good. And she was, we were talking, she was a model.
She was primarily a model.
From
Connecticut. She golfs a lot, too. There's a lot of articles about her golfing and stuff like that. So, hey, hit the greens. You might catch her.
Then she'd run me over in a golf cart.
Then you have Stephanie Holden, which she was iconic, too, but because of her relationship with Mitch. So, originally played by Alexander Paul, she was in seasons 3-6 and reoccurred in 7. When Stephanie was 7 years old, her father died in a helicopter crash in Vietnam. This affected her deeply, and she developed a huge fear of helicopters. Stephanie was eventually abandoned by her mother and was raised by her grandmother. She developed a romantic relationship with Mitch Buchanan, and the two became very serious. The relationship ended abruptly when Stephanie left Mitch without explanation because she was married. Stephanie and Mitch eventually got over their differences and formed a strong friendship. She dies in season 7 after a lightning strike while at sea. This was a big episode. Paul later reprised her role as the late Stephanie in the second season episode of the spinoff Baywatch Nights.
She's the one that not that I regularly watch the show, but she's the one that I crushed on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was, I liked her.
She was, what I will say, like, out of the TV show, not that she's, like, the other girls were fun and things like that, but if there's any, like, however close you can get to feminism, like, she was a good role model for women.
Right.
Or as best as she could have been under the Baywatch circumstances. Right. So, yes, very much so. She was, yeah. You know, she was a lieutenant. She was strong. She was a leader. And she's a leader in this as well. Obviously, they underplay the relationship a lot more in this.
And listen, this French Hedera, she was beautiful as well. In fact, I actually, when I was thinking about this movie and how to talk about it, I felt that her character wasn't in the movie enough.
Yeah.
I felt that way underutilized. And I don't know why that is. Maybe things just got cut out. But I actually felt, because she, number one, like, it's hard to point at another movie that had such amazing women presence. Like, not just one, it wasn't carried by, but they're each beautiful in their own way, and they each had their own individual type of presence on screen. And she was really, she's very beautiful. I felt that she was probably underutilized. She wasn't given enough for whatever reason.
Yeah, I would love to see more from her. And, you know, right now she hasn't done quite as much, but Chi-Raq is a big movie, so definitely check her out in that Spike Lee movie. And then, you know, one of your favorite characters in this movie, Ellerby, right? So originally played by Gregory Lee Allen Williams. He was in seasons 1, 3, and then 4 through 5 and reoccurred in 2 and 8. He's a good friend of the lifeguards, apparently not in the movie. A police officer who patrols the beach but hates the water. He appears in this movie, obviously. So,
and again, I couldn't quite grasp that because he seemed to not mind Mitch. Like, they would fist bump when they, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the fact that he was the guy going, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. No, and that he couldn't, he would never, like, he couldn't enunciate, like, he'd be, no, don't, wait, what are you? He always seemed sort of lost, but he was funny, and I always did like the fact that he pointed out, no, what, you're a lifeguard. Give it to the police.
But I was like, well, it is my cheat day.
It's my cheat day.
So, yeah.
That's even sort of funny, yeah. I put protein in it, too.
And then I thought I'd shout out a couple of the characters that weren't in the movie but that were beloved characters. Hobie, which is Mitch's son, primarily played by Jeremy Jackson, but Brendan Call also played him in season 1. Caroline Holden, Yasmin Bleeth. I'm surprised they didn't. Caroline Holden was the sister of Stephanie.
Right, and I'm surprised that she wasn't, whether anything was offered, and if she just turned it down. Because to me, it was always Pamela Anderson, Yasmin Bleeth.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in that? Like, well, they seem to be the two that were the most representative, yeah, in a sense, or the most popular.
I don't want to get it. I mean, here's the thing with her. I know she suffered, like, you know, there's been a lot of about her in the news with weight gain and her own issues. And so,
okay.
I'm sure they didn't. Maybe they didn't want to do it just because they knew she'd turn it down. You know, it's one of those things if you're like a producer, and this is where it does get iffy. It's like, do we even invite her because we know she's probably not going to, she might want to say yes, but feel really weird. So if we just don't offer it to her, even though it's a little bit shitty, at least we're protecting her. I don't know.
Yeah. And I didn't know anybody. It sucks getting old, but I didn't know any about that. You know, I'm not, when it comes to a lot of people, I don't follow people and stuff because whatever their personal lives are, but watching the movie without knowing what you just said, I was a little bit like, where's she?
Yeah,
because she had totally had her day in the sun with Baywatch. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Then there was Cody Madison. He was in the later seasons 6 through 9, he was Olympic swimmer with an irregular heartbeat. And then he had relationships with CJ and later on Lonnie McKenzie, who was played by the Carmen Electra that we know. So that's Cody.
She was the other one, Carmen, yes. Electra.
Yeah, she came in after CJ Parker, Pamela Anderson left the show. They replaced her with Carmen Electra. The resident bad boy was Neely. She was in many seasons 5, and then 6 through 8. and reoccurred in 9. However, she was played by 3 different actresses, so the picture I have is of Gina Lee Nolan. At first, she was played by Heather Campbell, then Jennifer Campbell in season 9. So a lot of bad. Yeah, she was an interesting character. She was, when we say bad, she was really bad.
Wait, like bad actor or bad character? She was a bad character.
Okay, yeah. So Neely's, she was the, she created a lawsuit against Matt Brody because of sexual harassment that never existed.
That she faked.
Neely became involved. Yeah, she tried to ruin Mitch's relationship, and it was bad.
And she was so important that 3 actresses had to play her.
Absolutely. And then last but not least, Carmen Electra, who plays Lonnie.
Right.
She was a lifeguard who had dreams of becoming a famous dancer, so they obviously used her actual real-life talent for the show. So there you have it. Let's get into the...
Now, do you know if they reached out to Carmen Electra? She's another one that, again, I was wrong, because yet Pamela Anderson, I remember always hearing about Carmen Electra. I mean, again, being a Howard Stern friend for many years, Pamela Anderson's a regular. Mm-hmm. Carmen Electra used to be on the show a lot. Mm-hmm. And I forget if Yasmin Bleeth was on it, but that's where it was from this show that you always heard about these 3 women. And they were on all of the magazine covers.
Yeah, I think from what I remember, because she did an interview with Maria Menounos on Maria's show, Conversations with Maria, and I listened to it. I wasn't there, but I did listen to it, and the idea of Baywatch came up, and at the time, she said she just hadn't been called, and she was okay with it. Now, whether or not they called her later on, she declined. I'm not sure. This was about a year and a half ago before the release of the movie. So, you know, plenty of time still left to have put her into the movie. It was still like when they were casting the movie. All right. So let's move into the production side of things as we start to get into this. What did you think of Seth Gordon? I mean, you and I both like a lot of his movies.
Yeah.
Horrible Bosses. Both, you know, I love both movies.
Uh-huh. Same here. And I actually... Okay, I think in Horrible Bosses, he had more to work with as far as comedic talent goes. Charlie Day, Jason Bateman, who's the third?
I know who you're talking about. But even what's the Kevin Spacey?
Kevin Spacey.
Like even Kevin Spacey in his own right is a comedic genius in that movie. Right. In both movies.
You know, I think from a comedic standpoint, from a comedy standpoint, he's working with a little more talent there, okay? I think Horrible Bosses, we were talking about original comedy, that's actually a very good concept comedy. Who at one point or another has not had some semblance of an altercation with a boss or whatever? The concept is great. The performances are really good. And then when you go into the second one, right, you bring Chris Pine, you have Christoph Waltz and Chris Pine, okay? Nobody really thinks of Chris Pine as being a comedic genius, but Seth was able to get a good comedic performance out of him, and I remember watching him going, wow, Chris Pine's actually funny in this movie. And so I think he had a better base to start off with for Horrible Bosses. I think coming into Baywatch, yeah, it's a job. It's comedy. It's his wheelhouse. He could try to make it work. I don't fault his direction. You do have Zac Efron, who's, you know, proven from Neighbors and Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. Not a good movie, but he could still be funny. You know, and The Rock is willing to try and break out. So I can't point to performance. I just think it ended up, number one, it was too long. We talk about this. This movie should have been an hour and a half. You know, it should have been no more than 100 minutes. So I think the script needed a little more incubating to let's hone this in. Like, we have this great gag at the beginning. Let's try to make more gags like that, because that's actually funny. And why don't we take an old Baywatch plot, like squid stealing surfboards, and let's throw that in, because A, some people are going to get it because they're Baywatch fans, and that's just fucking so ridiculous. Like, how did the show ever last on the air? And we can make fun of that. Like, I just, more could have been put into it. It's of no fault of Seth. I mean, he is a good comedic director, and he gets the best out of his actresses and actors. And a lot of them, to my knowledge, aren't comedian people.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I think if I had a chance to do it, and I'm not saying that the end result would be better, but my idea would going into it, I think there's enough there to work with trainees.
Sure. So
you take the core of the pre-existing Baywatch lifeguards, insert the three trainees, and you kind of make it about them. That's it. You know? And,
right.
And you don't need a main villain. You just kind of have these... they're almost vignettes in a sense.
Sure.
And then you're hinging more on the relationship rather than like, okay, great, there's this villain we have to all go after.
Sure.
That would have been my thought.
Yeah. I totally get what you're saying. And so I have just different complications on the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because again, it's not about the complication. It's about strengthening the bond between them as people.
You know, and I was even thinking too, like, what if you're at the point where Mitch was thinking retiring, which Hasselhoff never did. And he was like thinking, I'm going to leave the beach. And
actually, he did. Well, Mitch Buchanan thinks about retiring.
Yes. He got fired, but I meant, you know, yes. So
no, I meant in the actual TV show. Oh, okay. There was a point in time when Mitch thought about retiring, because he was getting too old for the, you know, but then he was like, oh, they still need me.
Still need me for Baywatch nights. But I mean, I don't know. There could have been a myriad of ways that they could have gone to have made it a stronger comedy, especially now in the summertime. Yeah. You know, and I understand too. I don't fault them picking the date that they picked, which is Memorial Day weekend. It's the start of many summer vacations. Summer needs a good strong comedy, and I just wish that this could have delivered more.
I did like their slogan, "Summer is coming," especially when they had Summer Quinn on the poster.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the music, because it's someone that is near and dear to us.
Yeah.
Christoph Lennertz, we got to interview him. He's worked with Seth Gordon a lot, and so, you know, and he goes on to explain one of the biggest things for me was why they didn't use the Baywatch theme song more, and he goes on to explain it, but do you want to kind of give his quote?
Well, I have that article up, but you have it in front of you.
Sure.
Because go ahead, because I was going to talk about other stuff that was really cool, but
sure. In that sense, he just felt it was dated. It was 80s sounding. It was 80s pop. So they tried various different versions, three different versions, and it just wasn't quote cool enough.
And you know, when you say that quote, when you think of Horrible Bosses, right? And this is where he really shines, because he's not your traditional composer, but he blends score with pop, like pop rock music, right? So there's a scene in Horrible Bosses where they're all walking in like slow motion, and they're actually walking in slow motion, but he uses like a cool song to set, it's almost like Reservoir Dogs-ish, like the way they're walking. I didn't get the sense, like, he's great at blending that and trying to find that rhythm in blending rock music or contemporary music with score. But it was something funny in this article too that I read about him, because he talks about Elmer Bernstein, who's no stranger to great comedic score. This guy's worked with John Landis and Animal House. He's worked with Ivan Reitman. And we talk about Ghostbusters. He talks about Ghostbusters. But what was cool is that we talked to him a couple of years ago, and he talked about how he studied under Bernstein for a year. Mm-hmm. And we had that first. We talked about that first. But I appreciate that he's trying to do something different in comedy. He doesn't he doesn't just stay the path. So he always does a good job, and he always, in these kind of movies, I think that kind of music helps with the pacing. May not impact the comedic punch, with the exception of like that scene in Horrible Bosses, but he does help the pacing move along.
Fortunately, my time is a little bit cut short, so okay. I'll get through a little. Under Armour, a huge sponsor of this movie, as you can imagine. Which, by the way, I found it interesting that they've also done a lot of movies like Any Given Sunday, Friday Night Lights, The Blind Side, Dark Knight Rises, which you can imagine for the Dark Knight suit,
sure.
Lone Survival, Captain America, and The Martian, believe it or not. A couple of other quick things. One Piece swimsuits have gone up in sale. So we're going to get to box office real fast here. But
I like the One Piece swimsuit.
But the One Piece swimsuit, the box office may not be great, but the One Piece swimsuit numbers are going high. So something's working. But let's talk box office.
Yeah, $33 million thus far as of June 1st. Its production budget is around $69 million, which means they probably... So it's right under 70, right? So you're probably looking at close to 100, depending on what you put in for the marketing. Now here's we talked a lot about foreign box office, and we talked Pirates of the Caribbean. Thus far, though, I'm not sure that they've opened up in all their territories.
They have not,
and that doesn't make sense to me, because I would figure with a movie like Baywatch, which was so huge overseas, why wouldn't you just get it out there? Like, I don't understand why there wasn't a concerted effort. Because like I said, we talked about it. Television-wise, this is a huge export for us. It did huge. I don't understand why they're holding back. Because unless they were afraid of piracy. But at least, to me, it would just seem from a sales standpoint, since the movie didn't do fantastic, that maybe it's harder to do. I don't know. But worldwide, it's done $34 million. We'll see what happens in the coming weeks. It's interesting because even though we were talking about film critics, we were talking about criticism, this one got skewered. This one was about 20%. Yeah. And I know it was hovering between 18 and 20. We'll call it 20. Mm. We'll give it the benefit of that doubt. 20% ain't good. But on CinemaScore, it got a B+. Which isn't horrible, particularly for a comedy. But, you know, in this day and age, I'm not sure, you know, we talked about the effect that Rotten Tomatoes may or may not have. It's interesting when you have a B+ and you couple it with a 20%, it's sort of a fast burn, because people, I don't know, we've got so many movies coming out now in the summertime, it's hard for it to stay. And it's already been deemed in the media as a flop.
Yeah.
So that's tough, because people aren't going to pay attention to a cinema score. They will pay attention when every news outlet, when they're doing a rundown, says, oh my God, what such a disappointment. So, you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for them.
You know, I would be interested in a sequel. I would like to see a little bit of changes. I think, a little bit less self-referential and just go for it, but you don't have to go to the level that they did.
I'm going to be more interested in their international box office to see if Baywatch still has that cachet. If there is to be a sequel, it'll be because of international box office.
This is so true.
That at least that's my silly thoughts on that.
Silly thoughts. Why don't we get to final thoughts?
You know, as I said, you know, they made a movie out of a show which, from a story perspective, wasn't very good. Very popular. There's no denying that even today, when people say Baywatch, outside of the movie being released, they know what you're talking about. So, pop culture iconicism, Baywatch is. I had wished that this movie would have been funnier. I sort of had the sense when I was watching the trailer that I was getting the funniest stuff in the trailer. Fortunately, there were a couple of other gags that were funny. We talked a lot about that gag at the beginning, getting stuck in a beach chair. I wish there was more of that cleverness throughout the movie. Beautiful cast to look at, I felt that their chemistry did really come off on screen. They looked to have a very good time making the movie together, which is fine. That at least showed up, because sometimes it doesn't happen that way. And if they're miserable, I'm miserable. You know, at least they were having a good time. So there you go.
So, yeah. Was it the perfect movie? No. Did I enjoy it? I did. Would I recommend it? I don't think it's for everybody. But I do, you know, if you're a fan of Baywatch, the TV show, it's worth a watch. It's worth the curiosity factor, if nothing else. And if nothing else, I applaud them for taking a shot. Then, you know what? Call me next time. I'll help you guys out.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us. At DMovies1701 for Dimitri. At Movie Anatomy for here. Definitely check out our past shows. We've done plenty of them. Just today we did Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Tell No Tales. So check out that. And check out the Christopher Lennitz interview we did for Horrible Bosses 2. We've done tons and tons of movies. I'm coming closer and closer to 400 soon. And down the pipeline, we've got Wonder Woman. We've got Spider-Man Homecoming. We've got so many others that I can't even think of.
Dunkirk.
So who knows?
And when you said go back, look up our Christopher Lennertz interview, because that was in surrounding Horrible Bosses.
So, and what we're listening to is the original theme song to Baywatch, seasons 1-3. Thank you guys as always. We'll see you guys next time for another Anatomy of Movie.
Tech and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.